Hey guys, it's Dinara Agajani, and on today's podcast, we're going to be looking at U.S. and Iran relations, the history of how we got here, and we're also going to be looking at the future to see what's to come. Today, I have my brother here with me. He has agreed to help out today.
Hello. Hello, my name is Manuel Agajani. I was born in Iran and moved to the States when I was 17.
Okay, so we're going to start off by looking back at history. So there's a couple of key points that we've all grown up, especially for those who grew up in Iran. Something that's been always said and never forgotten. So the first part in history, I think, was the coup that happened in 1953, in which with the American involvement, the American oil giants were very interested in Iran during that time, and they did not want oil to be nationalized, as Mossadegh was planning on doing. So they were able to overthrow him and replace him with the Shah. And when the public went against the Shah, the U.S. was very crucial in helping put him back in. So during the years in which the Shah was in power, how did the public really feel about him?
So as much as Shah was very helpful for the country, and he was trying to westernize everything in the Middle East area and bring more Western culture into the country, the people of the country felt like they were being pushed away from their Islamic beliefs. So as far as the economy and everything else, I think the country was in a good position, but it was people's beliefs that got into the way, and Shah's mentality towards religion that caused all the issues, and people's beliefs towards the states.
So I think, from what I understand, that especially like our family, who are Armenian Christians who were living there at the time, it seems like they were pretty fond of him. Is that correct?
Yeah, especially if you ask our mother, since she went to school in the days when Shah was in charge, she was happier compared to the days when Shah was gone, because one of like easy examples would be wearing hijab. When Shah was in charge, hijab wasn't mandatory. So if you wanted to wear it, you could. And if you didn't want to, you didn't have to wear it. But when Shah was gone, everything became mandatory, and the country was more was fund on Muslim and Islamic beliefs. So I believe Shah had better intentions, but also that's not what the people wanted.
Yeah, so he was very much influenced by the West and the U.S., and that explains why Khomeini was able to come in and gain so much power with the public. He came in when the Shah was still in power, but they were able to oust him. So they sent him to France, and they were able to get rid of him for a while.
Khomeini was pretty much basing his entire campaign on Muslim and the religion. There wasn't much of talks about economy or anything else in the country, but the main issue was the Muslims and the Islamic beliefs that Shah wasn't very fond of. So it was very important for the people to elect someone who would bring the religion back to the country, and that's how Khomeini became very popular among the people.
So he came back, and there was the Iranian hostage crisis that happened. And it seems like after that point that Iranian and U.S. relations were never the same again.
Yeah, so pretty much what Khomeini tried to do was not only make Shah look bad, but also make the United States look bad, saying that, hey, these are the people that are trying to make your religion go away, making you do things that are against your religion. So people were very people were very excited, in a sense, to be able to get their country back, quote-unquote, and make sure they have control over their own country. So taking the hostages was a way of Iranian people to say, look, this is how much we hate the states and how much we hate foreign forces in our country. So I think they implemented that very well in people's brain that any Western culture is evil and is against you. So he was able to do that very well with the people.
Yeah, he provided the voice that they didn't have for so long. So after that comes the long Iraq and Iran war. And it seems like Iran felt like they were backed into a corner from then on, especially with the U.S. helping Iraq. It seems like after this point was when they decided to look for allies in other parts of the Middle East, and they were able to find it in the Hezbollah and Hamas and fund them so that they were able to push their interests forward too.
Yeah, that was pretty much the climax of the people really believing that the Western cultures are totally against them, because not only they had the revolution to show the United States that, hey, we want to be able to be in charge of in our own country, and now they were in a very long war with Iraq, and the U.S. was funding Iraqi forces. That's what also made a lot of people mad and pretty much hate the United States, and there were just chants of death to America along the streets and just graffiti on the walls saying that they hate the United States because they believed that the United States was really working to get rid of Iran.
And it seemed like it was like that for a while until 9/11, where actually Iran was able to help the U.S. defeat the two regional rivals at the time, the Taliban and Saddam Hussein. But after that, in about 2002, when the nuclear program gained ground, it seemed like it was adding more conflict for the West, but especially the U.S. There was speeches given by the Iran president, who was also very critical against Israel, saying quotes such as wiping out Israel, and this angered a lot of the Israeli lobby in Congress, and it seems like this has had a lasting effect in Congress, especially with the nuclear deal. Even though Iran claimed that the nuclear program was purely for peaceful purposes, the West obviously did not trust them. So there were a lot of military economic sanctions that came in from 2006, even though that Iran was willing to sign and ratify international arms control treaties, the West still didn't trust them. So it eventually led to the nuclear deal under President Obama, in which actually the Arms Control Association published an article in April 2019, in which they said that Iran has been and was abiding by the nuclear deal up until the point in which Trump decided to back out of it. It outlines the nuclear deal and shows that Iran was not a major threat in the region. It was actually abiding by all of the laws, even though the U.S. made it seem that they weren't.
Yeah, so pretty much past the Iran-Iraq war, with the new generation coming in and the internet and the social media, people started to believe in new forces and having a peaceful conversations, especially with the Western culture. So the new generation believed that, okay, we're not going to be as hardcore believers like the previous generation, and we are going to try to work this out. So kind of the idea and the mentality towards the United States changed among the people, and things seem to start to work out, especially I would say the best part was during the Obama years when there was a new nuclear deal. So everything started to seem that it's going to be working out for the country, for both sides. There were benefits on the both sides, obviously. So it was going to be such better times, and people started to believe in the relation of the Iran and United States.
Yes, yeah, so moving forward, there are many scholars such as Hussein Mousavian, in his article, in which he says that what will play out in the future is going to be based on mostly individuals and institutions that come into power in both countries, he pulls out the three schools of thought in Iran, which are the radicals, the conservatives, and the moderates. He says that the radicals don't want any relations with the West, but the conservatives are supporting negotiations, but they still believe that the U.S. is hostile and don't trust them fully. And there's the moderates who think that U.S. and Iran should converge presently. What becomes a problem in this situation is where the individuals who have the power are in that school of thought. Based on the spectrum that they're in, they're more willing to come to negotiations or even be open to any negotiations. On the U.S. part, Mousavian talks about how Congress is dominated by hardliners who are opposed to any deal with Iran, especially with AIPAC, who are very influential and believe that Iran having a nuclear program is threatening to Israel, even though we know that Israel does have their own weapons.
Yeah, so pretty much during those, I would say the modern side of the country was very happy. The conservatives thought, okay, we'll give this a chance and try to work it out. But it was until the Trump organization came in that pretty much all of that went down the drain.
Yeah, so we can see that how the public is changing their opinions. Mousavian even conducted a poll in 12 Arab countries, I believe last year, which consisted of 84% of the population of the Arab world, in which people said that the U.S. and Israel were the major threat to their interests, which is very surprising based on what we've been hearing here in the media. So in order for a new paradigm shift to occur, Mousavian says that it needs to be with moderate Islamists from Iran, who are going to be able to trust the democracy of the U.S. and want to pursue a regional security structure. And if they're able to do that, it will help with both national interests and the regional environment. So do we think this is possible? Does the U.S. really think Iran is not as capable as it is? Is that what the problem is? They're undermining them. We know that Khamenei came out after the Arab Spring and said that the Arab Spring is weakening U.S. and Israel because so many governments that are backed up by the U.S. had been falling, such as Egypt. So those dictators that were being overthrown are not able to persuade any control in the region. So would cooperations with Iran actually be helpful for the U.S. to have another ally in the region, especially since Iran is so critical in other places where proxy wars are happening, such as Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria?
Well, during the Obama organization, they believed that the Iran was complying with the requirements. So that's when it was very easy for anyone in Iran to also back this idea up and say, you know what, we're going to be able to work with them. But now it's very difficult because now the conservative side says, look, we tried and it never worked out. So it's difficult for the states to come in with a new deal as well, because now everything on the Iran side is also tense because they've lost that trust they had.
Yeah, I think pulling out of the nuclear deal actually did more harm on the U.S. because it makes them seem like they're the ones who are not able to uphold their end of the deal, not only to Iran, but to other countries. So I don't think it's a good look for them, because it seems like the other five countries that are in the deal still want to stay with Iran.
Yeah, as much as the European side wants to stay with the contract, it was a very immature way for the United States. If they didn't like the terms, maybe they could have tried to work something new out, but to completely pull out of a deal that you've already made was, it made it look very bad, and it created a bad image of the United States in the minds of the Iranians.
Yeah, Trump backed up his decision to do that by saying that it would force Iran to come to the table with more of an open mind and a way to have a better deal for the U.S. But as we can see, Iran doesn't see U.S. as such a powerhouse as it used to be, especially with Russia still having so much power in the region. and with Iran showing that they're the most important geopolitical, economic, social sphere in the region, especially with having the biggest population in the Middle East, and with where the country is located, it controls so much of the areas to get to the oil. It seems that Iran is not going anywhere anytime soon. So do we think Trump's tactic is going to actually work? Is Iran going to come to the table? Or are both sides going to have to let go of this feud?
Yeah, it was a pretty bold move by the states, because there's also some behind-the-scenes issue, because even the people of Iran, especially currently, are not very happy with the government. The economy is pretty bad, and it would seem terrible for the government to show weakness towards the United States, because once they show weakness, then they could also have the threat of the overthrowing the government by the people or by the United States. So Iran will definitely not back up, because they need to show the strength and show their own people that, hey, we're capable of operating on our own, even though there are sanctions. Because they need to make sure that they show power not only to the world, but towards against their own people, because not the people are also not happy with the government. So the government is also scared of the another revolution possibly happening. So no, I don't believe the Trump organization made the right decision. And I believe this is something that needs to be done, like the Obama organization, when both parties came to the table and they said, look, these are our requirements, and they both came to an agreement, which is a much more peaceful and easier way of negotiation.
Yeah, it's pretty much what Hussein outlines in his article, where he talks about the issues, challenges, and prospects of the relations. He says that he talks about what both sides need to consider before they're able to come to negotiations. He says that the U.S. needs to understand the ability of Iran to withstand sanctions, and they also need to understand the religion and the clerics in Iran and the wider region of the Middle East, and how important that is in their decision-making, because so far it seems like they have just been pushing their democratic ideas across and not taking time to understand the Shia cleric organization, which has been able to stand since Khomeini came in the 79 revolution. So it's not really going anywhere. It's been more resilient than the U.S. thinks. But also on the Iranian side, Hussein talks about how Iran needs to have more of its moderate individuals come forward to be able to be less hostile to the U.S., because so far that's what they've seemed like, and they haven't let their guard down.
Yeah, so I think that's the best case scenario, but it's also hard on the Iranian modern side, because now the conservatives don't believe in anything that United States offers, and it's very difficult to convince anyone within the parliament to say, hey, you know what, can we give it another try? And it's created such a hostile situation, especially with the tensions and the history between Iran and the United States. So it's going to be interesting. I'm interested to see what will come to the table, especially with the situation that they're in right now.
Yeah, it seems like there's mutual interest on both sides that would be gained from this, such as improving economic ties, especially for Iran, but also for the U.S., because Russia is so influential in the region right now. Also, with fighting against terrorism, it's clear that Iran was able to help them in the past, and to have Iran on their side, they would be able to have way more support in the future. Also, having disagreement with Iran could prevent a potential Israel from taking military action in Iran in the future if relations between Iran and Israel get even worse. Also, there will be enhanced stability in Iran, which will help the further crisis in the Middle East that's only gotten worse as there's more instability in any of the countries in the Middle East. So yeah, this is going to be very interesting to watch. And I hope that with a new individuals coming into power, especially in the next elections, that we have some people who are more vocal and have better ideas put forward on how to solve this.
Yeah, it will definitely be interesting to see who will be in charge depends also on the U.S. side if Trump gets reelected or not, but we'll see what happens.
Okay, that was our podcast for today. Thank you, Manuel, and thank you guys for listening.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.